Welcome to the Centre for Public Integrity's podcast series, In the Weeds, where we get down in the weeds with the experts who help the centre in its work. My name's Catherine Williams and I'm the centre's executive director. And today we're talking with Andrew Young, former clerk of the Victorian Parliament and member of Deakin University's Parliamentary Research Unit, about upper house orders for production of documents. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Catherine, and thank you for inviting me to get down in the weeds.
Well, I'm so pleased that you're able to be here with us because I first came across your work about 4 years ago when I read a paper that you had written about upper house orders for production in Victoria. And there was one line of your conclusion that really struck me, it really stayed with me, and I rely on it heavily when I'm talking with parliamentarians about this really important issue. So there's no one better we could have with us to talk about an issue that can seem like an esoteric issue, about why it matters, about where it works, about where it doesn't work, and where that's the case, about what's required to fix it. So let's go with first things first. What is an order for production of documents?
Thanks, Catherine. Well, like most things parliamentary, it's wrapped up in some gobbledygook terminology. So perhaps I should first of all unwrap what we mean by an order and production. So firstly, an order is something that will have started off as a motion moved by a member in a House of Parliament. And that motion will say something like, this House requires the government to produce documents in relation to, and it might be, say, a piece of infrastructure, the business case for something. And in fact, in the Victorian case, a live example or real example from the past would be that the government produced a business case for the Australian Grand Prix and the government funding that goes towards it. If a majority of members vote in favour of that motion, it's then become a formal, lawful decision of the House that the government must produce the documents, and that, of course, is an order. So that's firstly what an order is. The second word, of course, is production, and that simply means that the government must produce the documents back to the House. It's not for the government to then go and say, oh, we've been ordered to produce these, so we'll just go and publish them somewhere else. It means they must produce them back to the House that ordered them. So what you've got is a lawful decision of a House of Parliament that the government must produce documents back to it. And of course, they will be documents which have otherwise not been made public. Otherwise, there'd be no point in the House doing it. So they're not documents that are sitting on a government website. They're not documents sitting in the Victorian Public Record Office. They are documents that the government has withheld from the public, sometimes for a good reason, but oftentimes because simply the government doesn't want to make them public, even though they belong to the public.
And so can I ask you, Andrew, is there any doubt about the power of upper houses to use these orders?
Some governments might say, yes, there is, but I think very clearly, no, there's not. Now, in the New South Wales case, that's been tested all the way to the High Court, and the High Court found that very clearly the upper house in New South Wales, despite having a weaker constitutional basis and constitutional powers of parliamentary privilege, still was found to have the power because it's what's reasonably necessary for Parliament to do its job, which is to keep governments accountable. Now, in other jurisdictions in Australia, there are even clearer provisions of parliamentary privilege, and that is powers for Parliament and immunities for Parliament, to do the job that Parliament's meant to do. That is, ensure responsible government and ensure that they ventilate issues and bring information that the government holds before the people and debate it. So there's no doubt that the power exists. Where it's disputed, and this might be what you were alluding to in the opening comments, it's really a political dispute more than a legal dispute.
Okay, all right. We'll get to the nature of that dispute and talk about that further in a little bit. But just to make sure that I've understood correctly, these orders for production matter because they help the Parliament to perform its scrutiny function, and this helps uphold that constitutional tenet of responsible government that's so vital in our system. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, let's unpack what a Parliament is. It's a representative body, first of all, because members are elected on behalf of the people. It's a lawmaking body. Constitutions clearly say that it's the only body really that can make law, outside, of course, of the courts making common law and interpreting the laws that Parliament makes. And then, of course, it's got another function, which is to hold government to account, because government doesn't sit entirely outside of Parliament. It comes from within Parliament. Whoever wins a majority in the lower house gets to form government. But inherent in that is that that government is therefore subservient to and accountable to the Parliament. So, yes, there's a straight scrutiny role, but the other thing to think about is that one of the earlier things I said, Parliament's a lawmaking body. So it's not about just bringing information that government holds into public light for everyone to see because they have a right to see it and because we should make sure government's doing the right thing. But that information then informs future lawmaking. You can only make good laws if you've got information. So if you're going to make future laws about the way government should be administered or whether certain policies should go ahead or not, you need information to base that on. A lot of that information is held within government.
So these clearly are a vital transparency tool, and they're a tool that we've looked at now for some time at the Centre for Public Integrity. And a few years back, we did a piece of research looking at compliance rates with upper house orders for production at the federal level over time and what the trend was. And what we found was, while in the federal parliament from 93 to 96, compliance sat at about 96%, in the current parliament, it sits at about 20%. So it's obviously a concerning decline, and we're seeing an increasing reliance on claims of public interest immunity, so also obviously called Crown privilege or executive privilege, as the basis not to comply with an order. Can you tell us a little bit about this basis that governments use to resist complying with orders?
Yeah, so look, the terms public interest immunity, executive privilege, Crown privilege are effectively used interchangeably. Probably the term that's used most often these days is public interest immunity. Now, the concept of public interest immunity is effectively a test that can be applied when there's a decision to be made about whether to release information. And that test is, on the one hand, there is clearly a public interest, a public benefit in the public knowing information. That's the basis of our democratic system. But against that is the risk of releasing information. But that risk, of course, attaches only to a minor number of legitimate things. So whether, for instance, it might compromise the national defence of the country, it might divulge in important intelligence, which of course it would not be in the national interest to divulge. It might be documents that would divulge something that relate to the proper administration of justice in the courts or in police. And of course it's not in the public interest to release that information. And then there's cabinet in confidence type reasons, and that is documents that are directly related to the decisions of cabinet, not indirectly, which we might get to later. So that's, if you like, the type of thing that's being talked about when you say public interest immunity. The other thing to say about public interest immunity is it's a little bit like some of the powers of Parliament themselves. It goes back a long way. Some of it is very much rooted in convention and practice, even though these days you can find statutory references to public interest immunity. So, for instance, you might have some evidence acts in different jurisdictions that talk about the basis upon which a government can make a claim of public interest immunity when they're involved in a court proceeding and the court has said, hey, you need to produce certain documents in discovery processes as part of the evidence. So you'll find it in two places these days, convention, but also in some statutes. But those statutes place strict limits on it.
So it's clear from what you said that there are going to be legitimate cases for the claiming of public interest immunity, but probably the difficulty here is that it's the executive claiming this privilege, this immunity, over documents that it and only it has. So how do we know whether the claim is a valid claim or not?
Yeah, and look, this is a problem, of course, with schemes that have been set up otherwise to make government information available, such as freedom of information laws. Now, we all know the problems with freedom of information laws. They're cumbersome, they're expensive, and in fact, delay by government almost becomes a form of withholding. And governments often see themselves as the sole decision maker in FOI cases. Orders for production of documents by parliaments are different. They can be equated a little bit more to the court situation I was talking about, because a claim of public interest immunity by a government is just that. It's just a claim. Problem is, governments tend to think it's a decision, but it's not a decision. It's a claim that somebody independently needs to adjudicate. Now, in the courts, if a government makes a claim of public interest immunity, a judge doesn't just sit there and blindly say, fine, okay, I better not see that then. A judge will say, well, thank you very much for your claim. Show me the material, show me your claim, and the basis of your claim, and I'll make a decision. In the parliamentary context, clearly, again, it shouldn't be the government deciding as well as making the claim. They should only be making a claim. There needs to be separate, independent adjudication of that claim. And that's the missing piece at the moment in a lot of parliaments, because governments are simply getting away with saying, well, no, this claim is also the decision. It shouldn't be the decision, because a government obviously often has a vested interest in not divulging information.
That's right. And what you've just touched on is the line in your paper that I referred to has been having really stuck with me. That is that currently, and you were writing about Victoria, the situation means that the government is ultimately the arbiter of the validity of its own claim, which is fairly farcical as a situation. I think we'd probably agree about that. So you said that you imply that the situation might be different in parliaments around the country, is of course is the nature of our federal system. Is there a jurisdiction where this system is functioning as it's supposed to function, where there is some independent adjudication of the validity of this claim?
Yeah, there is, but there's only one, and that's the New South Wales Upper House, where for more than two decades now, the process has played out appropriately. So maybe I should go into what is appropriate, as well as why it's operated well in New South Wales. So the starting point is the late 1990s, and there was a dispute between the government and the upper house in New South Wales. And unusually, because it's very hard to get matters of parliamentary powers adjudicated by the courts, but unusually in this case, it went through not only the Supreme Court of New South Wales and the Appeals Court of New South Wales, but all the way to the High Court. And in all three instances, the upper house was successful in prosecuting the fact that it had powers that trumped the powers of a government to say no to producing documents. And what the court found was that for all the lack of certain constitutional provisions and privilege provisions for New South Wales Parliament in New South Wales, because it's a little bit different to other jurisdictions where there are clearer constitutional bases for these things, for all of that, it was still reasonably necessary for a parliament to function that it be able to compel government to produce documents, with some exceptions, of course, as we discussed previously. From that point on, and that case was known as Egan v. Willis, and from that point on, the government of New South Wales, of both persuasions, Coalition and Labor, has effectively accepted the power of the upper house and has complied with the standing orders. Standing orders being the rules of the house, which say that if the house orders documents, the government must produce the documents. And if some of those documents the government wants to make a claim of public interest immunity about, that's okay. But there's an independent legal arbiter under the standing orders who makes that determination and makes a recommendation back to the house. So that's a really important principle. And it's worked for, as I say, at least two decades now in New South Wales. Sometimes the independent arbiter has upheld the public interest immunity claim by the government. And what's been interesting is that the House in New South Wales has largely respected that decision. Quite often, the arbiter has also decided, actually, that claim's not valid and the House should have the documents. So the documents are forwarded to the clerk and the arbiter, even though the government makes a claim of public interest immunity. In Victoria, interestingly, the upper house has very much similar rules. It's all been undone because the government refuses to produce the documents in the first place.
Has there ever been a government in the history of Victoria since this requirement existed under the standing orders that has provided the documents to the clerk so that the independent legal arbiter mechanism can be kicked off?
No. So all that's ever happened in Victoria is that the government has either seen fit to produce the documents or the government has seen fit to send a letter back to the clerk saying, we're claiming public interest immunity, therefore you're not getting the documents. And so there's no capacity then to engage an independent arbiter to make an assessment because there's nothing to assess. The arbiter would need the documents. So it remains an impasse in Victoria. There's a little bit of an in-between process that's played out in Victoria now for a few years where the government has, perhaps in response to a large order, sent certain documents back and then not sent other documents where it's made a public interest immunity claim, or it has sent documents with redactions. Some of those redactions, I think, have been entirely fair because they might, for instance, have blacked out someone's personal address or someone's personal bank details because they happen to have been caught up in the documentation that's been asked for. So that's where things stand in Victoria. It's an impasse now that has existed for the best part of 15 years.
And so you've talked about this different approach in New South Wales, even though the standing orders are almost identical in respect of this independent legal arbiter mechanism. Do you have any insights into why the compliance culture might be so different between the two jurisdictions?
Well, let's be fair. New South Wales' starting position in the 1990s was the government refused to produce the documents. So the impact of Egan v. Willis in the High Court was obviously hugely significant because governments, as I say, of both persuasions in New South Wales in the ensuing two decades have respected the court's decision, even if begrudgingly they've accepted the court's decision. In Victoria and in every other jurisdiction, there has been no such court cases. There was the beginnings of one a few years ago in Victoria involving a former leader of the Greens, Mr. Greg Barber, who did want to challenge the government's non-compliance, no longer challenge it through the parliament, but take it to the courts. Now, that case ended up not really going anywhere after a while for various reasons. There was no decision. So we can't say that the court upheld the powers of the council in Victoria, nor can we say it didn't. I personally think it would have if it had found a way to actually adjudicate the case. But of course, the starting position for courts is that they largely don't want to get involved in these matters between government and parliament for reasons of parliamentary privilege. So we remain with, I think, governments in Victoria that have taken a political view to what is a straightforward legal question. The straightforward legal question and answer is the upper house has the power. Victorian governments have taken the view that we think we can get away with not complying.
So would it be fair to say that perhaps every jurisdiction that hasn't had an Egan and Willis maybe needs an Egan and Willis, but we've got this difficult situation where the court is unlikely to want to pick up a matter of that nature?
I actually don't think they do need an Egan and Willis. I think what they need are members in houses, particularly upper houses where governments don't tend to have a majority, members who have the willingness to see this all the way through and also to actually understand the powers. I think there are members in upper houses and lower houses, for that matter, in Australia who perhaps don't fully understand the powers at their disposal. And then there are some members who perhaps think that once a government has said, well, we're not complying with your order and we're making a public interest immunity claim, that's it. But the fact is, non-compliance with a public interest immunity claim with an order for production of documents is a contempt. Now, in Parliament, contempt of Parliament is effectively something that's punishable. And it's a matter of law. So in Victoria, there have been instances where leaders of the government in the upper house have been suspended from the service of the chamber for non-compliance. Now, that's something which is good because it is establishing a practice and continuing a convention of the powers of the House. And they, in parliamentary terms, the practices of the Houses are actually incredibly important, as much as any written law, unusually, perhaps. A little like court practices, in terms of common law and the way the courts operate, also are just as relevant as written laws. So I think there are many Houses in Australia who, and the Senate in Western Australia are examples, who have ordered documents, then experienced non-compliance, but really haven't followed through with punishment. They may have passed a motion of admonishment, admonishing a minister for not responding appropriately. In Western Australia, they also refer matters off to the Auditor-General for a review of the claim. But even where the Auditor-General finds the claim of of public interest immunity is not valid, nothing seems to then happen, even though the government doesn't comply. So I think what we need is a concerted effort by members of Parliament around Australia in different houses to realise the importance of this power, and to realise not only the importance that members, that the governments comply, but what signal are they sending if they let governments get away with not complying? Because as I say, the practice and conventions of parliaments are just as important as any written laws.
So we need to see parliamentarians empowered, in a sense, with information about this power and about what the consequences can be if there's non-compliance. And we need to see parliamentarians, in a sense, perhaps prepared to muscle up in response to executive non-compliance. And do we need to see in jurisdictions where there isn't a similar formal legal arbiter mechanism like we see in Victoria and New South Wales, do we need to see that in place under the standing orders of each parliament?
I think it would be a good move, because it not only states very clearly that the House knows it has the power, but it intends to utilise it. Those standing orders could also include the fact that it's a contempt if there's non-compliance, because that in itself helps to educate the members, because a lot of the rules in Houses of Parliament are unwritten. They are a matter of practice and convention. Standing orders enables you to sometimes take those and put them into written words in rules, and that can be useful sometimes because it educates members. I think the other thing to say here is that whilst I'm talking always about the political attitude to this issue taken by governments, there's also a responsibility of members who are not in government, who are moving motions to get orders, to also act responsibly. Orders for production of documents shouldn't be fishing expeditions. They should be decisions that a member has made that it really is important, it's in the public interest for documents to be released which otherwise haven't been released, because it's going to genuinely inform public debate. So I acknowledge that politics can also be played on the other side. And as soon as that happens, of course, governments get very defensive, because governments see risk everywhere. And when I say governments, I mean the elected executive government sees risk everywhere. And that's the risk of media hyping up something, of the opposition going to town because something's now come to light, whether it's about a poor government decision or poor government administration. So it really is incumbent on Houses of Parliament to make orders for documents responsibly.
We need everyone to be responsible in the name of enabling responsible government.
Absolutely.
In other words.
Absolutely.
All right. Look, Andrew Young, thank you so much for your time today with us, talking about what is clearly a critical issue for our democracy. If you're interested in learning more about the work of the Centre for Public Integrity on orders for production of documents, you can head to publicintegrity.org.au. Thanks again.
Thanks, Catherine.